How does the Bible outline of history convey hope in a world ruled by powerful oppressive forces? Hello and welcome to The Good Word. My name is Matilda Fry. I'm professor of the Old Testament at Walla Walla University, and I will be your host this week. I'm happy to be here today with my conversation partners Jody Washburn and Dave Thomas, who are both professors at the School of Theology. Today we are discussing Daniel chapter 2 as a big picture history lesson. It is a chapter that contains a unique way of detailing the history of our world. And it gives it in advance because Daniel says that this is what will happen in days to come. Now, our interpretation of the kingdoms that we see in the image, in the dream image of the king, start with the head of gold, with the chest of silver, the belly of bronze, and the legs of iron. And then when we recognize the feet with those two-part materials, the clay and the iron, we also see the stone coming down from the mountain and then destroying the entire image. So what do you see as the most significant aspect of Daniel 2 in terms of a prophetic demonstration of history?
Well, I, in working toward that, Matilda, I've been long intrigued by the second chapter of Daniel because it's one of the few chapters in the Bible that gives a vast panoramic view of history. Revelation 12, I think, does a same kind of thing. But here you see the whole sweep of ancient history, at least from Daniel's time up to ours. And, you know, I'm intrigued by the fact that this chapter makes the point, in my opinion, that behind the comings and goings of human beings and nations is the hand of God. And I don't think it's there in a manipulative or in a meddlesome way, but it's quite plain that God is behind the flow of history, which with the intent of bringing it to a conclusion. And you had mentioned, Matilda, I don't know if it was today or last week, about the cosmic element. And I hope that comes out here, because when you get to the end of chapter 2 and you see the stone and it grows to be a great mountain or a great mound, I think that's the first clue we have that this is not like an earthly kingdom. There's some cosmic element at play behind history that one day will be the culmination of history.
Dr. Dukan, when I studied Daniel with him, he used to always tell us, you need to read slowly these texts, read slowly. And one of the things you notice when you read slowly, and also reading aloud also causes this to come to your attention, but that is noticing how much space in the text is devoted to a given topic. Mm-hmm. So it, in this case, you know, it's interesting, once Daniel finishes telling the king the dream, which he was required to do, right? In verse 36, he says, this is the dream. Now we will interpret it for the king. And then you have a section, and bam, 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 bam. Only a few lines are used to talk about the whole beginning part of the dream. And then when you come to the final, the fourth kingdom, and the details toward the end of the dream, you notice, like in my Bible, this takes up a whole column. Mm-hmm. And that in itself shows that the importance is not so much tracing this quick succession of kingdoms, but to say to the king and also to us, I think, as modern readers of this story, that whenever you find yourself, you asked, how do we find hope in a world ruled by powerful oppressive forces? Whenever you find yourself up against a wall, or maybe feeling that this succession of power is just going on and we're not making any progress, that is not the end of the story. Mm. To me, Daniel 2 says that so clearly. This is not the end of the story.
Yeah, in other words, the machinations of human empires is not the story.
Yes, there's a that's one part of a much bigger story. We're alluded that story is alluded to right here. You throughout the whole book of Daniel, you have this juxtaposition of the God who comes down and the king who continually tries to set himself up.
Yes.
Up, right? And
how great I am.
That you could say is the juxtaposition in the entire biblical narrative. Mm-hmm. That Christ comes down, makes himself nothing, becoming like a servant that people who are against Christ, right? Entities against Christ push themselves always up. Mm-hmm. And you know, this language of setting up comes, I mean, at like rapid fire in chapter 3. Mm-hmm. But even here in chapter 2, we're told what that's being juxtaposed against, because in chapter 2, when Daniel is interpreting the dream, he says, in the time of those kings, the God of heaven, in verse 44, will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. So this is not the end of the story. There's something else. Mm-hmm. And then in chapter 3, you have Nebuchadnezzar set up, you know, against chapter 2 and you realize, wow.
I think it's very important to realize there is a direct link between chapter 2 and chapter 3.
Yes.
Chapter 3 is the rewriting as per Nebuchadnezzar's ideals, the rewriting of chapter 2, because he didn't like what he read in chapter 2.
Yes, with much humor and literary genius, I might add. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. What I find also interesting is this part where in our way of thinking today, we make this huge difference between we live on this earth and we live in an earthly sphere, whereas there is then this spiritual and this otherworldly, the heavenly world. In the book of Daniel, those are pretty fluid. Especially every time you come, especially in a dream or in a vision, you come towards the end, the two come
merge.
Together.
Overlap.
Yes,
yeah.
And you are not able to to take them apart so easily.
Yeah.
So when we try to do that and force it and make it into an actual literal historical event here down on earth, then we lose that view from above. And also the intersection between them.
See, I find that fascinating because it's really God is really saying then that the flow of history that we can describe and identify leads on to a future that we cannot fully understand, but the cosmic is going to triumph in the end.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that was part of Nebuchadnezzar's way of thinking. It was not, this dichotomy did not exist in the ancient time, because Nebuchadnezzar must have some idea when Daniel tells him about the stone and the mountain. Otherwise,
now say more about
lost.
That. Was that that was something? Do you think Nebuchadnezzar understood that?
What would he think of a mountain and a stone back in the time when he established Babylon as a world empire? The both of these parts, mountain and stone, are used in the ancient Near Eastern world of mythology to speak of the powerful forces, the powerful kingdoms established, that they were always in the center of the earth,
and ones that they hoped would be permanent.
Then Babylon would be at the center, and Nebuchadnezzar's goal was to establish it as a permanent world empire, isn't it? We will see that especially in chapter 3.
And you think mountain, permanent, pyramid, ziggurat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is a wide...
So you think he would have understood very clearly that this was, that however he understood this rock, this stone kingdom, which would have been not a human kingdom, he understood it would be triumphing over the kingdoms of humans, including his own. I think he was distressed when he read about the Medes and the Persians and the...
Yes.
That's why he went to the golden image.
But he would set up this world empire and then build his temple and pyramids and ziggurats as house for the gods.
Yes.
So Nebuchadnezzar, the king himself, is then at least part of the divine world, if not a full god himself.
And then his ancestors would be continuing the empire.
Right, yeah.
Before we get too far along. I always like to point out the tiny, there's the smallest, but maybe one of the most profound prayers in Scripture here found in Daniel chapter 2. Yeah. We don't often talk about it because it's not part of the glitzy image with all the medals and all of that.
Is this the urgent prayer meeting?
But the prayer, which I find it interesting on a number of levels, but perhaps mostly on the, this is found many places in the Hebrew Bible in prayers, but you have the switch from third person to second person.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the prayer they prayed when they were in trouble because the king was going to kill all the wise men? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. During the, no. I'm talking about this is the prayer of praise. In verses 20 to 23, right before that, it's framed, during the night, in verse 19, during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, and you have this praise, mm-hmm. God is the one who knows mysteries, wisdom and power are both his, right? Not belonging to the king and the all that training that was so important. He's the one who changes times and seasons. He puts kings up, there's the sets up again, right? Mm-hmm. And deposes them, etc. And then it switches very similarly to Psalm 23, where partway through the prayer, instead of talking about God, like I have my face is looking at you, Dave, right? Like a cross. Now you have talking to God. You, O God, you are the God of my fathers. I thank you. I praise you. You have given me wisdom. And it's like you lift up your face is often how I think of it. Like these mm-hmm. visions are requesting us to lift up our face from our immediate context and realize there's more.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. An element in chapter 2 is that Daniel switches from Hebrew language in the ancient text. In chapter 2, verse 4, yes. He switches from Hebrew language to Aramaic, which was Nebuchadnezzar's language, and the one that Daniel now was forced to speak as the palace language and the language of
diplomacy yeah.
in Babylon. So the entire discussion about the how the people who came into the palace and they tried to negotiate with the king and then felt that they are going to lose. And then Daniel comes and has the solution, finally after the prayer, is written in Aramaic so that the king and all the people in Babylon were able to read and understand.
And that extends, we might add, all the way through chapter 7.
Yes.
So throughout the stories and into the first chapter of the apocalyptic or prophetic.
And that would include even Belshazzar in chapter, where is it?
Chapter 5. Yeah, the writing on the wall.
On the wall.
Chapter
where
6.
The queen mother reminds him, don't
chapter
you know?
5, yeah.
Don't you know this? All the story of this man?
Wow. Oh, yeah, about Daniel.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
We come to the end today, and my thanks go to Jody and Dave for this conversation, and also to Abby Wissing, our engineer. And I tell all our listeners also a big thank you for the good word. I'm Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.